aspects. Like, you have to have the picture. Where's the... you have a lot of books. Let me find one book with a picture.
The blue ones have good pictures.
You know the picture with the whole picture of Attilas? You need to remember that picture.
The low one. Get that one. You see Order and Paul on the right. Paul
picture. Where is it?
Go in the arrow. I'll get it.
You know what I mean?
Think it's in here?
I'm looking for?
Like this kind of guy?
Yeah, this picture, but like... Yeah,
there's a bigger version of it, I think.
Not clearly, but it should be inside here.
Yeah. If not, these are like too technical. These aren't like, you want with spheroid, you want with like picture, the circles and the...
I know which picture I mean, but not circles, picture. Yeah, you made it too complicated.
Yeah, like this is like...
If you have like any green, yeah, this green Ramchal that has a picture.
I have a Gizeh Ramchal here, which are Ramchal, but I don't know if it'll have...
Right. I know, let me think which book has this. I was like planning to buy a big picture and hang it in my living room and like... And I found like this beautiful art that someone made, and I emailed him if he sells it. And he doesn't want to sell it to me. So.
To you specifically? Like,
no, he doesn't give prints. I don't know. He made like a book. Yeah, generally, I guess. I don't know.
You're saying with like the shows that I take like art and that stuff.
Yeah, I have the book in my house.
I don't know if that one will have. This is a real one.
Yeah, it's some in one of these they have like a basic. Cause problem with all the pictures. Let me see. I'll print it. It's a shame. I should. Don't have that either.
Maybe not your Chaya?
Oh, he had it, yeah. Like, wait, what happened? Was he some
pictures? Oh, that he had that.
In the back, he has pictures. This is the picture camera. Yeah,
it's nice.
We need a much bigger one, but.
I think this one has that one.
It's this.
Yeah, yeah.
This is how Attilas looks.
And oh, okay.
This is the diagram.
Feast your eyes.
So this is the picture you need to remember for everything. If you look at it, it's not that complicated as it looks.
You can close it now.
Yeah, it's not going to help you now, right now. It's a relatively complex.
Yeah, yeah.
But this, we should blow it up and use it as a trip. So it's also a good picture. But basically, you have everyone, you should know. There is... five, six, 12, whatever. You can get a bunch of very high numbers. But in the Arizal, there's only five main spheres, or five main parasifim, which are called Arich, otherwise another word for Kese, Abba, which is another word for Chachma, well, not really another word, but another. Ime, which is another word for Bina, Zah, or Zeramchim, which is another word for Tiferet, in other words, Chesed Gevurah Tiferet Netzach Chesed, and Nuk, which is another word for Malchus. That's the only five things you need to know. And
what's the last one?
Malchus, the Nuk. The Nuk gets separated into two and three and five. He has a bunch of them, but it's all about one. Each of these can be separated in all kinds of different ways. Now, the rule is that nobody interacts with anyone above. There's no jumping levels. In other words, if you're the Nook, you only ever talk with Zah. You never talk with anyone else. That's the basic rule. Though if you come to Purim, we'll find out that it's not the rule. But that's the basic rule.
We gotta get there.
We can't let you forget that.
But that's the basic rule. The basic rule is that you go in order. If you're Nook, you speak only with Zah. If you're Zah, you speak only with Imma. If you're Imma, you speak only with Abba. If you're Abba, you speak only with... Again, this is a little more complicated, right and left, but more or less, that's the rule. So if you ask... Just remember that rule. So now if you ask about... I was talking about the Sfiras HaMalchus of Attilas, which is the Nuk to Zah Attilas, meaning to say she has a Yichud only with her husband, which is Zah. There's no. Now, of course, this is not as. It's way too simple to be real.
I'm sorry, can you read Nuk?
Nuk is abbreviation for Nukva.
That's what
which
I thought.
Is Kabbalistic, nicer way of saying things. Right. A little bit nicer.
Okay, that's what I thought you were saying.
It's like abbreviated.
Yeah,
and we have to use these words because otherwise you sound too bad.
This is all Attilas?
Yeah, this is the whole thing. Okay,
I thought Attilas was just the. Oh, maybe just I don't understand what Attilas is.
So let me. Okay. Gosh, we need a bigger. Yeah. All of these five. This is what we call 10 spheres of Attilas. Okay. Just very general rules. Yeah, this is only like half of that picture. So. Besides for Attilas, we have a bunch of other worlds, because we're obviously not over there, at least not most of the time, which are called Bia, or short for Bria Yetzira Asiya.
Right.
And we're not Asiya either, don't worry, we're somewhere else. I mean, hopefully, maybe.
Really?
Depends who you ask. not as simple as that, but we can assume that we are, I mean, in more general, in the most general terms, and yes. Yeah. So, and those are the world. If you're in that chart, there's like a line on the bottom of the page. You'll see, and it says Ad kan atzilus mikan ve'elach, other things that are not atzilus, and therefore, really, that's really we should learn that one time. But really, when you, if I'm talking about tefillah being connected with the ani or the malchus of atzilus, to get there, that's why we have our whole Sedra Tefillah, that's Shemoneh Esrei in the real sense. In order to get there, you need to do, as it called, Kavanas, that's Olam HaSiyah, Psik Tezenim, which is Olam HaYetzirah, Beres Gishma, which is Olam HaBriah, that says in the Sedra, no, which some Sedras. And finally, we could, that's like a level that I was explaining in the first class about replacing your eye with the Ani of the Malchus. That's, when you're there, that's ready. To get there is a whole whole journey until you get there. We're not starting there, although maybe in some other way of looking at things, all kinds of complications. But
so there's the Malchus of Bria and Malchus of Atziah and Malchus of Atziah.
Yes, and another, so does that, clarify something?
It helps me a little bit.
It seems like, so when it says, Daki Kotfialo Belam Asiyah,
oh, so that's okay. I see what you mean. Okay, now this is another.
Are we in? Because it made it seem like we were in Malchus to Malchus.
Okay.
That's sealed.
No, so what that piece means, and I'm gonna go back to it. What's going on here is something different, meaning something more general. In other words, let's explain that then, because we have these. So you only have to know five. Everything is five. Or another very. There's another chart that's also good for. I might have that chart also, but I'll find it somewhere. I have it in my WhatsApp somewhere. There's only five levels which we could call, if you look at Shema Vaya, which is going to be the four levels of the Shem plus one, which is the Kutz Shel Yud, the Keter. Now, these five are themselves, in other materials, we call them five levels that we just discussed, Arech, Abba, Ema, and Zon. Zon is another quick way of saying Zeram and Vinok. If you would be a real Mekubal, you could say Avu for Aleph Vema, like Aleph of Aleph and other different kind of variations. Now that's in Pepratius and in detail of Olam Atzilus. If you look at the whole universe more generally, then we will say that there are five worlds, which are also four of them you know about, just like the four Isis of the Shem, which are called Atzilus, Bria, Yetzirah, Asiyah. And the fifth one, which is Ak, Adam Kadmon, which is corresponds to Keser in general. And these have the same kind of relationship, we would say, as these four. So if we talk about some kind of understanding, which is the understanding of the Sfiras HaMalchus, the same thing in very general terms would be for the entire Olam HaSiyah, which is the Sfiras HaMalchus of the Kladut, the general Sfiras HaMalchus of when we look at all five as one big family, then that would be the Sfiras HaMalchus. That's really what he's saying when he says Tfilas Ba'olam HaSiyah. I mean, well, we have to talk about where we're standing in the chapter in the cloud.
Malchut de Kladut.
Yeah, in general, in other words, we could think about exactly what it means in the technical terms, but it's always the same. Basically, what I'm saying is that it means the same thing. To say Olam HaSiyah, to say Malchus mean the same thing. We could mean the Malchus, which is Olam HaSiyah. And then there's very complicated derishim, which where the Malchus is, and getting her up and down, and all kinds of different things. But it's always going to be this same structure. The structure is always the same. That's the
Tefillah always starts in Malchus, and then
that
we're going to be talking about Malchus and Tzilus.
At least that part. It always starts. The one, like the way I explained it, the one that's asking is always the Dasiya or the Malchus or the Ani with Aleph or with Ayin, you know,
yeah,
however you want.
So Tefillah is connecting Malchus to Atzilus with Za Atzilus and giving the Mochin of Al Anima.
Yes.
Meaning it's not more Prat than that.
Not more?
Meforat than that.
Well, we could mean Meforat more
if
you want, but that's...
But that's what he's saying right now, basically. It's just we're taking the... Okay.
Yes. Yes.
That's enough for this week.
Okay. We can go.
Yeah, well, we can mean.
No, but that's just like how you say. Like Aleph Bay. It's like these are the kind of things that like they really need to be known, like the back of your hand, like and they are at the back of your hand actually, right? How many? So I was thinking to do something much more simpler today, because we have to always make more abdominals. Like there's this like basic abdominal, which in order to know the vocabulary you need to know like the map, basic map. And then there's different what I can talk about, different ways of getting into the map, or different like the big thing the big thing that the Magda Mezrich said is that the map is not a territory, right? And then Mezrich Magid is a famous quote, and somewhere I find it, it said that he met this Mekubal guy and he asked him a question. If you're traveling for many hours, it used to be sometimes, not always, but sometimes you stop for a long time, and he told him, well, I know you're a Mekubal, you probably understand me, Mechavan, all the Kavanas, well, I know them too, I mean, we've learned the same books, and it doesn't take that long, it takes much faster. And the Maggid said, yeah, it's, you're reading the map, but I'm driving on the road.
Yeah.
That's in my language. He said it in the edition in different words, but basically saying the same thing. So reading the map is pretty quick, but driving on the road might take you a long time. It might be quick too, but it might take a long time. Similarly, the story of the Maggid meeting the Baal Shem Tov was, which is that I do know where, I think it's in the Gemara of Magid Rav Leake, written by Reb Shlomo Melitzke, where he recounts the story where the Magid came to Baal Shem Tov, and he was a Talmid Chacham, and he read a lot of books, and he heard that there's this Baal Shem Tov guy which proclaims himself as some kind of mystic and Kibbal, he knows some stuff. So he thought, well, I have this like piece in some old Kabbalah book, I don't remember which book it was, and he's like, he didn't understand it, so we'll go ask him and let's test him and see if he knows what he's talking about. So he comes there with his old book, and he shows him this line, this paragraph. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. And Baal Shem Tov says, "Okay, let's start to learn it." And apparently, in that piece of the book, he was talking about some halachim and some other kind of spiritual stuff. And Baal Shem Tov starts to read it, and he starts talking about some malach, and the malach comes, and he starts to understand. Okay, so now that like show and tell way of learning, because there is this map way of learning. So we try to do both of them. And I don't agree with people that think that we don't need to know the map, because that's kind of stupid. I mean, you can't really. Some people think that you could, but generally, if you're... I like what Rav Monkstein says, that if you're a real tzaddik, then maybe you don't need to be mechav and kavanah. Because you could just do Avodah Shevelev, like the Chassidus sometimes says, like, have Mesiras Nefesh, but most people can't do that, so this is easier. But really, like, there's a...
Oh, this is easier.
Yeah, that's what he says, and recently he's been saying it that way. It's easier in the sense that at least you have a map. There's like a Chassidus saying that nobody goes with a hack, how do you say, with an axe. Nobody got into the heaven with an axe, besides the one guy, the Perish Meshulis, which was Chassidish Rebbe, the Perish Rimanov. He was a student of Ramendla Rimanov, who was a student of Choyza, I think. And he was known to be Amoritz. We're not allowed to say that, but he didn't know how to learn. And he started off being his Meshulis, it was like Shamash, he was helping him move the benches and stuff. And eventually he became a successor. And people said about him that he's the only one that managed to get into heaven without knowing anything. Just pushing until it worked.
Cool.
I really think that's easier, that's the harder way. Like the Baal Shem Tov story with the kid and the story, right? That's the harder way to get places. The easier way is to actually know. And if you try to do it, you have a good kavana, then it works. I believe that it works. At least for some value of working.
Hmm.
So what I was thinking to do is basically, we have the beginning of Shara Karanas, where he kind of does what he usually does and gives a bunch of different simpler things, or we call them menhagim or anagas, or like direction, really, instruction. In a sense, everything here is in this book is instructions, but most of them are instructions, like very elaborate map instructions. But he usually starts with simple instructions, and that's also the way we start actually doing things. In other words, and this is very important. You could do like I said, like the easiest way to pray is the Mechalon Kevanes Rashash. So we learn it, and it's not that complicated. I mean, if you're smart, like if you're not stupid, then you could figure it out, you know. Not like, no, I'm serious. That's people are like, people get faith because it's like, you know, very complex, but it's not. There's like five simple rules that you figure out and you get used to it, it works. And if you spend enough time, you'll get it. It's not like, basically, but Gemara is harder. If you ever learn Gemara and Tosfos, it's harder than Kabbalah. So that's just the general. But it's still true that starting anything, the place to start, and if we talk about tefillah as a thing, like as a world, something that exists, or four worlds, like we say, and go up and down, and there's like a whole journey. And starting like turning the keys and starting to move is one of the biggest steps that you can take. Because after that, things just happen, and they go where you go. And the place we start, and it's a good place to start every day, and every year, whenever we think about, is to start in the most simple place, the most really simple. Simplicity is underestimated generally, because the more you do know, and the more elaborate your thoughts become, more elaborate your life becomes, especially if you have something like an inner life, or like you say, a prayer life. The better it is to start from the beginning, like Moedani or wherever the beginning is. Simplicity is a huge thing, and when you do it that way, in other words, and this is also true for learning intellectual stuff, if you learn Gemara or whatever it is, and you go back to the Mishnah and you say, okay, I've studied this for half a year, now we're on it. I want to like actually get it, which is a whole different thing than being able to repeat the whole chapter. One of the good ways of doing it, which I think I discussed somewhere else, is to actually go back to the most basic things, which seems like you could teach it to kindergarten kids, but you can't. In other words, you could, but they don't get it. They're like upside down thing with most things. Like, to give a introductory words, you need to be much smart. You need to know the subject much better than to give an advanced class. Yeah. And I mean, people try to give introductories that are just wrong. That's easy. But if it's wanted to be correct, you need to really know your stuff much better. And the same thing for. Same thing for real stuff, for real, real work, or tefillah, anything that you really want to do. If we go back and start in the morning from very simple things, those simple things stop being so simple, but they're still very good, important place to start. Yeah, it's also a very good way out of various traps. I don't know about you, but many people get into different traps when they say, okay, I'm just, you know, you could be simple, like, literally simple, which we're not talking about, because then we wouldn't be talking about it. But it could be literally simple and just like wake up and say whatever it says in the Siddur. And then you could be elaborate, which is basically the opposite of simple in my world. You could be complicated. And that's like, or in other words, you could be deep, or you could be like very serious, and I have a whole chattel and a whole understanding and a whole like all kinds of complications. And then someone comes and tells you, okay, so what is it that you're doing? And that's happened all the time. what is it that you're doing, or what is it that you think, or like what is your philosophy, or what is your theology, or what is your Avodas Hashem? And you're like, well, you'll never understand, like, come on, you'll come to Shiva, I'll give you a class. And basically what happens is that you just get into a trap that you don't understand either. Right. This elaborateness is the trap where you only understand it, which is like, you know, and you have that face, and you're like,
yeah.
And that's not real understanding, and that's like, and that, in my view, that's the beginning of understanding. That's when you start learning things that seem very elaborate and complicated.
Yeah. This is a very apropos quote from Kurt Vonnegut. Anybody who claims to be a scientist but can't explain what he does to a third grader is a charlatan. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Charlatan.
Doesn't mean that you could, I would qualify that, but yeah.
Yeah.
You need to at least be able to explain to your own third grader. And it's true.
Navarro, this investor, also says, if you ever find yourself memorizing things, it's because you don't really understand it. If you understand it, you can just re-explain it from the beginning every single time. You don't have to memorize it.
But you shouldn't be doing Haftamas anyways. You should just be doing more of the primary literature, no?
Meaning?
You said before.
Yeah, I want to, this is all like, to say something.
No, not you. I'm saying.
Now we're doing Haftamas.
Now we're doing Haftamas. No, it's
we kind of went backwards, but I wanted to read something.
Yeah, meaning it's much harder to do the Haftamas, but... Like, the Hakdama becomes its own language a little bit.
It's not a real good place to start. The real good place is to
learn. Should end with the Hakdama.
Yeah, we do that.
Begin with the end.
Meaning, you get my end, and then you can start again.
No, but also this, right? Meaning, the beginning is also the bottom line.
Yeah, we began, and what we began last, these two pieces that we read are kind of something, they're not as simple as I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's actually move on from that. it's important because we really get stuck in this. Like, okay, so we have to do all these great things when we say Shema Yisrael and Chayzbos, and that, it's true, like you're saying, when you know something, you start from the most simple things, you get there very fast. But if you just always jump, then you never get there, but it's like, doesn't really, like, fake.
So
it's kind of what we talked about.
Yeah, I had that question also. What's the difference between an introduction and a commentary?
Well, they're backward. I mean, the truth is, they're the dirty secret about most books that you read is that the introduction gets written after the book.
Always. I tell you that when I write legal papers,
you always write the
preliminary statement is the last thing I write.
Right, because you already know the content, basically.
Well, you got to go through the content.
It has to basically summarize what...
Right, basically, you got to go through the content. If I had to say this entire 50-page brief to somebody while we're riding in an elevator in 30 seconds, what would I say?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then that's the preliminary statement.
But you can't know until you go through the preliminary document.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
When's the first thing we're moving?
Always in the end. I think usually from writers that I followed, the first scene is written first.
Oh, interesting.
But sometimes the last scene is written first.
Right. Pick it, sir.
So I want to do something like this. I don't know, and when you read, you usually read the beginning first. Mostly to create a map in your mind of what you're going to learn.
That's what I was saying also.
Not exactly what he's doing, but...
No, but the Hakdama here is, it seems like it's part introduction, meaning you'll need to know this to do what we're about to do.
Yeah,
but it's also the bottom line.
In that sense, but I don't know if it's meant to be that way. That's how I read it. I'm not sure really...
It's more about my orientation to that Western.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they actually meant it, which is... Okay, in any case, so I really want to think about, because the way I think about this, it's also the Hakdama to, like, the actual practice of what he wants you to do, not only in the theoretical sense.
Right.
So if you read this book, and the way this was organized, but that's, in Sharkman, this is actually the way I'm going to do it. It's over here, he kind of then did a whole chapter about tzitzis and about tefillin. And then he went back to the beginning and started from Birchas HaShachar, and Shachar is organized in that way.
Oh.
So we're gonna, it's just in your page, it jumps a page in this book, but it's really the regular order. And it says Pratim Achelim Bedikta Gatfila, it's in the second page, in the second column of the second page.
Okay, yeah.
So that this has been
in Shara Kavanah, this immediately
follows this basically follows what we and Shara Kavanah's what, and it makes sense. Like whatever, it depends, but
yeah,
how he does it. So he does. So there's Anam Manhugim. Like there's the first thing it says, you should not put your finger into your ears when you're davening, which is like halacha kind of thing, as far as I can tell. Because you need to wash your hands if you touch your like your whatever you have in your ear. I'm not sure why that's just halacha, as far as I can tell. And he did. So it's something that he does. Like he. Well, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that Chaim Vital does. Like things that Arizal told him. He was a real like student. He wrote on everything. And, But the next few things are more interesting. And he does. Then he says a second thing. There's basically three pieces that I will think about today. Next three paragraphs. Second thing he talks about davening loudly, which is interesting. It says like this. So Darizal's minhag was to pray quietly. Quietly doesn't mean as quietly as Renesha, I guess, but he never would raise his voice. And the reason is because what he says here, the reason is in other words, he's the opposite of whatever Stalin Chassidim do, which is to scream. He doesn't seem to like that way of doing things. He doesn't quietly. And then he goes, on Shabbos, he would like give some more voice. He would say the words a little more loudly, and Ben Ima meaning whichever Nusach or whatever song they were singing on his show. In other words, it would not be something that he does for himself. It's not something that he's doing because he thinks that it's appropriate to speak loudly. It's something that he does because it's Shabbos and we want to be a little more extroverted on Shabbos.
Extroverted.
Yeah, Bekvet Shabbos. Like really what it means, I think probably what it means is that in his shul, or actually in most shuls, on Shabbos, that people sing or they do some more interactive things. And he would, like it's Shabbos, we have to participate, show some participation. This is the reason why this kind of thing is interesting to me, as well as the next piece, which is more interesting in simpler ways. But the thing that's interesting here is it kind of gives you an image, like a real image, of what kind of tefillah is trying to get at in this way of doing things. Because we could really think of many kinds of, like I said last week, I think, about 2 weeks ago, we could really think of many different kinds of prayer, and there are, like there's this medrash that says there's 10 lishanis of tefillah, and two people already wrote a book to explain how there are different kinds of praying. One is the Be'er Me'ayim Chaim, which is a book called Shara Tefillah. The other one is Rabbi Shimshon Pinkas, which copied them. He wrote a book, Sha'arim B'Tefillah. The same insight. He says that he's copying him. I didn't figure this one out. He says different pshat, but it's based on the same insight that there's many different. When we say, like I said last, when we say prayer, we could mean many different things. And if you, one of the things I would suggest people do is do a prayer tour. And go around in different shuls. Not in Crown House, because all the same. But
except for Chevra.
Yeah.
Except for Chevra.
Sure.
Granting that Chevra is different.
Yeah. This is anti-Chevra, for the most part.
It is.
Yeah, right.
It's very introverted prayer. But if you go around in different shuls, and I think we should, I mean, I have in my life. But and of course, you can't really see what people do in their heart. That's between them but you could see different styles, and there's different styles, and it's usually useful to know different styles because you get stuck in a certain style and it doesn't always work, at least for me and people that I know, my friends, never works to actions of keep on trying in one style. I have a friend who was a Kalina Chosid, and a Kalina, there's one way where you're supposed to scream as loud as you can, and doesn't come out that the akol ma'ir lakavana or somewhere. But at least it's harder to be distracted when you're screaming. I'm sure you could.
Unless the guy next to you is screaming louder, then it's easy.
Then the whole play.
Yeah.
And he told me he got bored of it, so he went to his rebbe. He's like a pinskalin rebbe, which is an interesting guy for himself. And I told him, look, and he said, also, try something else. Like, to shul does that doesn't mean that you have to do the same. And knowing all these kind of ways is useful. So in any case, the Arizal's way seems to have been extremely quiet. You could say something like that. Extremely quiet. If we set up a very simple dichotomy between loud prayer and silent prayer, or which is like a very external way of saying it, but we could say more of some prayer that hurts and prayer that's pleasurable. It's another way of saying it. Or a tefillah that's very extroverted, and we could think of it as very extroverted, not in a very basic sense, but in a directed towards something else, directed toward a machlokes, like God and me fighting in a certain sense, like says sometimes in different places, in a certain fight, shas nechama. And the opposite would be a very silent, very, very, very silent. Not just silent, but very silent. Darizal's way of praying seems to be much closer to the very silent one and the very introverted one. The Zohar says, there's Kahanim, and this gets discussed, and I don't have a source for you right now. The Zohar says there's Kahanim and Levim. The Zohar says they both had different jobs. Levim would be Kalei Nechsidim, or they had a job of singing. Saying Tehillim and saying whatever it was, the Shishoye, with music and Kalbach style. No. More, actually, nobody knows, but more extroverted ways of, which is important, and that's. And the Zohar says the Kahanim didn't do that, well, they obviously didn't. And if you think about it, and he's the guy doing the real work, doing the Avodah or doing the Kabunas, or what, which is a symbol, or Tefillah is a symbol of that, or that's a symbol of Tefillah, whichever way. That's the real work, and they were totally silent. Like maybe he made a bracha according to some places in the Gemara, but it was total silence. And that's a very kind of opposite, a kind of different way of thinking about what it's supposed to mean or what it should be doing. He's that's what he calls the laharisachna the em v'yira. And I, for the most part, most of us would do better with a lot of noise because we're not doing anything, so we're trying to do something at least. that's the truth. Like, and this is this is fun to talk about. But critically, there's like different communities where they have this thing like we don't scream, we're like, you know, we're serious. And in other words, someone was criticizing that, and he said, you know, like I remember, like Slanim Chosid and Ager Chosid, so in Ger there's also more very contained kind of tefillah. They don't hold of being extroverted. It was like Polish connected people, but that's how they say it. See, say it in Devon. They daven quickly and kind of silently, not closer to this. So there's other Chosid, I don't remember which like in more of the violent tradition. It's not violent, but lively tradition. And there might be violence in that too. And he comes and he says, you know, there's something amazing here. You know, in our shul, we teach everyone to daven like loudly and with a lot of slavis. And it doesn't work for everyone. Like some people do it and some people just don't. And over here, it works for everyone. We're all davening fast and silent. Like, you're amazing. So basically, you're doing nothing. So that seems to be easy. So for the most part, that's where we are usually. But
sure.
But that doesn't mean that we can't just talk about that. No, at least
when you say you're not doing anything,
humble.
Do you mean it's or do you ever have you ever struggled with? Like, if I'm not going to do it right, what's the point of davening at all? If I'm, like, tired and I can't do that,
Yeah. But one solution to that is to jump up and down, mm-hmm. which is a real solution. If you daven in Hebrew, if you daven somewhere else, then you might be ashamed.
Well, the next paragraph, if you're sad.
Yeah, that's a whole other
right.
Another situation. But yes, in other words, that's why. What I'm, what was I saying? What I'm saying now is, it's a kind of solution to at least make noise or at least do something, and you could say that, you know, relative to the Kehanim, you know, it's fake, but relative to me, it's not fake. It's at least something. In other words, there's a real issue, and this is really what I want to get at. There's a real issue where the biggest, one of the biggest problems we have, and I'm going to keep on talking about it, is that none of these things are real. At least socially, they don't really have existence. Because you can't really come and tell your friend, you know, how are you doing? You know, the davening was so-so today. Or it was very good today. You know, I'm really happy. Very few people have those kinds of conversations. It's not socially acceptable. It's kind of considered like pornographic or something. I don't know. Something
taboo,
wrong.
Taboo.
It's taboo to talk about it.
Yeah.
And there might be good reasons why it's taboo. But that leads to you yourself not believing that it exists, that it becomes very not real.
Yeah.
And therefore, most people, in order to feel that it's real, they would jump up and down. You know, what's his name? The guy with the Rolls Royces, Osho. He said that he invented this. He invented this this thing called the. I forgot what it's called.
Have you read his books?
Who's this?
Osho from Wild Wild Country.
Yeah, I saw the video on the.
He's like tantric, right? Movie. Something
like that? It's good, but
that's a great reference.
But he invented this thing called I forgot what he calls it, but jumping up and down meditation, basically.
He has a book on Hasidus.
Yeah, I know. But
when you read him, he's a Jewish writer anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
Jewish.
When you read Osho, he's a Jewish writer.
I'm not supposed to mention him.
That's dumb.
A long time ago, but what did I say? He invented this thing called jumping up, I forgot what he calls it, active meditation or something like that. And he says, you know, because Western people, they don't really do anything when they sit down, they're just sleeping. So at least do the opposite of that. And
yeah,
it might work just as well as the sitting down one. But it's really just playing to your biases, which say that jumping up and down, that's real. But sitting down silently is not real. But to him, it's very real, sitting down silently. And to him, it's very real just to have a thought. And I've been thinking about this a lot recently. People always ask this question. Okay, so you could read it and you can understand the meaning of it. It says, when you say, okay, now what should I do about this?
Right.
And if you go to some kind of way of answering, they can tell you, well, let me explain you. So Av means thinking about God in this way, and Asag means bitl, and bad, it means such a feeling, and that's what it means. But that's not really what it means. That's obviously not what it means. It's not possible to like have all those feelings. If you're being having them one word, that's crazy. It's not possible. Nobody's that complicated. but really what it literally means is think these words, or these shamas, which are words or images or however you understand it. Think that, and then most people just don't believe that thinking something does anything. Because their thought is kind of dead. Or they don't believe in it, or they never did that, or they don't know this thing of thinking. But in his world, just think that, and something will happen. Well, maybe to make it happen in the physical level, you need some more work to get it down. But that's a thing. And that's really silent. And in that sense, he talks about lohir sachna, like in the simple sense, it's like sounds like a litvish thing. Like you know, you're talking to God. Why are you jumping up and down? That's what. When people ask that question, which is a fake question, because that's not God. I mean, that God doesn't care, doesn't not asking you to sit like that, like, you know, in church, they'll sit like this. The Jews never like the Christian way of praying, you know, right? Because it's way too formal. You bend your head and like kneel down. Since the question started doing, we stopped doing it. I don't know what you call that. And there's like a lot of, if we don't remember, a lot of like old Jewish jokes about that, which people forgot already, about the Christians being taking the whole thing too seriously, do something, make a kiddush, you know, I don't know.
I know a rabbi who does a lot of interfaith work, and he said the imams, the Muslim, like equivalent of rabbis basically, were shocked that we say you in tefillah, we say ata. You're praying to God and you say you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
We're just talking.
I know.
What is this?
Formal language for a king, third person.
We do that too, but yeah.
Yeah, we also
I'm
do,
not
but
sure. Yeah, I don't know.
We do the formula. That's what they were saying.
I don't know the Muslim.
He was just saying to me, he said, they said they have no formulation like that, where they just say you.
Muslim, yeah. Okay, not, that's a whole other story. But, yeah, so, but then and he's not trying to get at that, because he doesn't have such a physical God that needs you to, like, have the Quran, you know? But he does get at something which he calls Amavira, which is really, I would say, being a little smaller, which is the opposite of the lively prayer in a certain sense, because that makes you bigger. And you could feel it physically if you check. Or you literally jumping up and down. And again, it's, if we're doing something, we should do something. But ira is another undervalued emotion in all over. Because if you go to, this is another like thing that I'm worried about. If you go to any of these most modern day people, contemporary people, which are interested in doing something, are very interested in love, very interested in chukka and passion, and how do you call it, thirst, and things like that, all kinds of different, you know, chabad havaka esh, havaka maim, all kinds of different.
Yura is hard these days.
What?
Yura is hard these days.
Yeah, it's not only hard, it's denigrated, meaning to say, because
right.
You know, have you never experienced that, and you it seems like a very, and of course, what you're imagining is probably a bad thing.
Right.
You shouldn't have that kind
of
yira probably. Yeah, and out of fear, that's what we call yira. Okay, this is a we call yira sa'inesh, or different, what does that call yira at the top? But different kind of things. But I really think, and at least I'm gonna like put it as a thought. It's probably just as amazing to experience awe of God as to experience love of God, and maybe more amazing in some ways. But whatever, I'm not making the competition.
It's really going with awe.
Awe is a better word.
Instead of fear.
Yeah, fear is a very bad word. It doesn't
right,
mean fear.
Right, you
know,
no, you guys, no.
Awe. Actually, fear, by the way, you know, when we say love is also a bad word, let's be real. I mean, usually most people's associations of love are kind of dumb. Sorry, love is blind, you know. It's like, we like praise it a lot because we're trying to convince ourselves that's something
right.
Kind of good.
That's more lust or desire.
Yeah, maybe. But lusting for God sounds good too. But it's still like kind of it's what it is. You should, but I'm just making like a note that, or even fear. I don't, it doesn't mean like totally that, but it could be an ecstatic experience. Like it's really out of the ordinary, out of, most people for the most of history, their main experience of God was through fear and or through awe as the truth. And at some point it changed for some reason. Maybe it's supposed to be like that, but it's still something that we shouldn't like totally cast away. It's like literally this figure of Malchus, which should be. The Rebbe Rachman is a little on it. And it's the basic definition, like the Rambam's definition in the beginning of Yisayda Teira is, in my words, being smaller, being less. Chabad, they would translate that as some kind of bit, but being glass, like being overwhelmed is another word. Yeah, so that causes you to like not speak as much or to not do as much. So yeah. Okay. So that's anyways, I don't know, I've always have like this image of Ariza like being total. His prayer looks like look like the Buddha statue, like closer to that than the most Rebbe's than you imagine. Like it's not like that. It's not like the Siddish picture like that. It's more
right.
like this.
Yeah.
And that's really. And I said there were some Siddish Rebbe's that went in this direction, like the Rishonim, which really was like that. There's like a famous story with the Rishonim that in the Rishonim they really have a lot of the karma, like a lot of. If you go to like the Vienna Rebbe's dish, you see him like trying to, he's making believe, but he's pretending to be a original Rebbe and he's like doesn't move. Like he could tries to like really like have a lot of lot of respect for every action, for every moving your lips is something that you don't do like. So there's a story, the vision I had, so there were these, I spoke about it somewhere else. There was like, I forgot, Strelitz Chassidim, some like opposite kind of Chassidim, which are like real lively ones came to visit him for Shabbos. Or they might have even like come like the beacon Medeba, the Rebbe died. I don't remember the details because that's not, I don't care. and they come to him for Shabbos, you know, they come to the Rebbe and say, hello, this is Shalom Aleichem, this is us, and we're trying to come to you for Shabbos. And he tells them, you know, I've heard that you, when you daven, like, you need earplugs, so please, in my shul, like, have respect and, you know, keep it calm. So they say, okay, Shalom, the Rebbe. So then, they're davening, and this guy is used to like davening, like, and he's trying, he's like, I don't know. And at some point he just gave up, and like, the whole thing exploded, and the whole shul heard about it. So after that, he comes to the Rebbe and he tells him, I'm sorry, I tried, it didn't work. And the Rebbe says, I didn't mean that. I meant don't prepare yourself to scream. If you have to scream, by all means, do that. That's another perspective on that. Anyways, okay. Not sure. That's simple. That it was more simple.
Yeah.
I need to do one more thing. The next thing later. So that's the first rule. He doesn't actually say you should do that. He's just telling you a story about what he did. So that's interesting to know. Maybe you should.
So Le'orot here is like to cultivate.
Le?
Le'orot. You think I'm Le'orot Achnavim of your...
Yeah, I
would... Trying to cultivate.
I would at least translate it like that. It might mean, yeah.
Maybe more than
a show. It's not to present. It's too,
right.
It's too, yeah. He took it very seriously. Like he has a respect.
Right.
Yeah. There must be some reference to this in some Siddish person that really didn't like it and he said something like that. Arizal was able to, but
we're not. Right.
I don't remember right now. Okay, I'm gonna do one more thing. You're not allowed to, it's forbidden. It's forbidden to daven with sadness. If you do that, now what's the problem? This is very cool. If you do that, what's the problem? What are you gonna miss out? So just kind of like made a whole new definition of tefillah, which is lekabel la'ira aliyah, whatever that means. And if you think of tefillah like that, then obviously you shouldn't do that in a atzvus way because then you can't receive that. If you're saying vidi, then you should. Then it's okay to be sad. But if you're saying vidi, then you should. Then it's okay to be sad. Al that's visa. Now he's kind of what I told you that you should have b'emuvira. Okay, he doesn't see that as a contradiction. As happy as possible. And his like image for this is like a servant or a slave, a servant serving his master with being happy about it, or really more like without resentment. The image Shamshi Ba'at said that nobody wants any sour people worshipping them. That's one like way of saying it. We can match ikra malavas. So this is really now another thing that is very popular, or at least that's quite well known, the idea. If you read Ivan Tanya, he talks about simply, he always references that he's a talking a lot about it. There's another pshat of the Arizal somewhere about Tachas Shleva, the Shul Hashem Lekech B'Simcha, which he references a lot. But I think that it's mostly being misinterpreted. And the reason is, I'll try to explain this piece in the way I understand it. So what is going on here is not someone coming and saying, you know, you should be the Simcha, and otherwise it's like, don't be all depressed all the time. That's not a good way of living. It's not nice to serve Hashem with depression. And that, I don't think that's his main thing. I don't generally think that he does into this kind of Musar, like, you know, like simple things that everyone knows and let's just tell you anyway. And I don't think that's what he's getting at. I really think that what he's doing is redefining what tefillah is, or actually what Avodas Hashem is, or it talks about any mitzvahs. And from that redefinition, it comes out a new way of actually doing it. In other words, there's a really good reason to think that tefillah should be ba'atzvahs. And that's obvious, because prayer literally means I'm missing something. I will discuss that first. It literally means there's a problem, or even like what we're talking about, emavira, literally means I'm not and you are. And that's not really a joyful experience. There's not really a lot of joy in that. And especially people say, well, at least a part of tefillah is like he talks about vidui and you know, saying, in other words, the way many people see Judaism generally and prayer especially, and weirdly, if you go in the American Judaism at least, Jews have a reputation for being having guilt and for being kind of kvetchy, which is a very American thing. It's not the European Jewish experience and it's not the Israeli Jewish experience. It's really American Catholic Jews. And and like in the same way, you could see in the American Jewish world, the biggest day, the biggest example of being Jewish is Yom Kippur. And the way they read Yom Kippur is, we've sinned, al chet shezeh, al chet shezeh, al chet shezeh. And that's like a big way in which your relationship exists. And obviously most people, at least in 2020, don't really go for that. Another story. Originally, I know I'm talking about this also in his terms somewhat. Originally, both in ancient times, literally ancient times, and in more recent Eastern European Jews had a reputation for being very happy, even almost to the extent of being somewhat unserious and kind of nihilistic happiness. Like, I don't really care. Not sure how I got to this. Oh, so that's just. And really, if we think about it in a more serious way, in his way, what it really means is that the bigger, the more driving emotion, or the more salient emotion in tefillah or in Avodas Hashem, he's asking you at least to switch it from being guilt or from being lack to being fullness, really. In other words, if you would ask anyone what happens by tefillah, people have a lot of different answers to that question. But very few people will tell you, you know, there's this supernal light that comes down. That's what it's about. And the crazy thing, and this is really what he's after. And if you read the Shari Kavanis, and especially if you read the Chaim diaries and Shari Chakradish, places where he actually talks about his experience, and you see the thing that drives him, like what he's chasing after, is something he calls Asuga. Hasaga, which basically means enlightenment or something, at least should have a similar connotation to that. Something like really getting it, or something like receiving or prophesizing, something like that. And he reads Kavanas and mitzvahs, reads everything, tefillah as well as every other mitzvah, as a practice, as a way to bring down that light. And he literally gives you instructions, so you know that you have to know the directions. So the light comes from Abba and goes to Imma and it goes to Zant. That's how you're gonna get it. But that's really a like a reframing of everything. And the craziest thing, and I've had a fight with this with someone on Tisha B'Av. The Rizal says, you know, you should cry on Churban Beis HaMikdash actually every night. And you know why? It's a skill for us. It's a skill for us. Like, not because you should be sad.
Right,
you know?
Nothing to do with business.
It's kind of like, and that guy was saying, oh, you're crazy, like, you're making it very egoistic. But that's really how he reads it. In other words, maybe it's a way of connecting with the Shekhinah or whatever it is. But the point of that is, it purifies you in some way, or it does something in whichever way it works to give you, get you closer to that light. And this is true, that this kind of work, this kind of thing, almost the definition of it, and almost the soul path to it, which he says here, Kemat kol hasagas v'chakadosh tali v'devazeh. It's this is a known quote which people know from the Chared, and that quote studies out that says that he achieved all his insight, another word for Asaga, by doing mitzvah b'simcha. But it's more or less said here, at least not in first person, but he says that. And it's true that the both almost the defining characteristic of that and the almost only thing you need for that is something called simcha. It's really doesn't really mean jumping around and being happy. It really means whatever is the opposite of feelings of feeling lack or feeling chisaron, feeling basically any bad feeling or any
suffering.
We could call it suffering. That's a Buddhist way out there. But
disconnection.
Maybe, but maybe more negativity, any negative kind of force, which is like a very general word. I'm trying looking for a more general word, more abstract. Any kind of negativity is more or less not the attitude that you want. If you want to have Oed Elyon, if you want different things from your prayer, like even he kind of gives you like this heter, like if you're saying Vidui, and sometimes he says in Shoshana, you should cry, like. He has like his, maybe, of course you could interpret crying in a more happy way also, but maybe he gives like space for, and there should be space for that. And okay, like I said, he lets you cry because that helps you somehow maybe have some kind of catharsis or somehow become more happy. But really like a real defining thing of, like you say, connection or like of Oed Elyon, is simcha. And therefore, it's not something that you can really force. That's a problem. Jumping in the nanach drop is not really going to get you there. Maybe it will, I don't know. I can try. But it is something that will get you very far.
Can I focus on the negative for a second?
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah.
Somebody has to.
Well, this is saying that you know, If you pray sadly during the rest of the Tefillah and Shachar, then it's a gadol. You flag gadol.
Yeah. He means you're going to ruin your meditation. That's a
basic. That's what he means. He's not saying don't daven.
Of course not. We'll see. I don't think he means nezek. He doesn't mean your car is going to crash. I don't think that's really not a problem. Maybe it might be some, in some ishtalashvas it might have from that, but I don't think that's really what he means. I think that's a stupid way of reading.
It's the opposite. It's the opposite of oral, you know.
Yeah. It means you're gonna ruin your experience. Like you're gonna ruin it. Because like people think that that's a good thing and it's not a good idea. Like it's try not to do that. Try not to go there.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that the defining characteristic of
So nezek that fida.
Yeah. Nezek like for your nefesh, because what do you think of as shlemus nefesh as doing what you're born to do is basically that. And you're gonna go around being or putting in different negativity, you're just gonna stop it and you're never gonna get there. In other words, in many ways, and of course there's all kinds of radical Chassidish ways of saying this. And the Chassidish way, I'll tell it to you anyway. the Chassidish way doesn't play sad or different radical that you don't know are radical. The Chassidish way of saying it is that the problem with avaris is that they make you sad. Right? You know? And in other words, they're really saying is that the thing that stops you from touching God, the thing that in his language asoga, is usually yourself, and not, it's not because there's like a real like how is it called? Machita shel ba'al, like a real thing. Okay, I've sinned, and it says a pusik of nesechem and mafdilim. That's not true. Maybe it's true, but figure that out. What's really happening is that you don't feel yourself worthy of it, so you're not even going to try. And not even, that's also a simpler way, but it's just not going to work. A big part, that's why Yom Kippur is really the opposite of that. Yom Kippur is basically giving ourselves permission to touch God. Because the reason why you're not doing Avodat Hashem most of the time, the reason why you're not, is just because you don't let yourself, because you've heard so many stories, and you have so many, basically, atzvahs. And Yom Kippur is really the happiest day in Yom Purim, which is like, connect, same idea, right? Just different ways of doing the same thing.
Came across a great quote yesterday, whether you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right.
Yeah. But in a very serious level, this is really a lot of what's going on. I think that there's a lot of dogmas. At least in Orthodox, we have a lot of dogmas of depression. One of them is known as Eridat HaDorot. Generations are going down, so basically we're stuck unless some Mashiach comes or whatever. We're really stuck. That basically doesn't let you be Mashiach, because if you believe in that, you never get the Mashiach. Is definitely not the guy that believes in that, because then he would say, "Well, I can't. It's not for me." Maybe Avraham Avinu was able to. Yeah. Really, a lot of these things are in other words, one of the reason why he was able to do that was because he stopped believing in that, and he said, "Well," and he really said things like that, and that's where you get all kinds of messianism out of. But he said, you know, all these things that we have to have. He told the Chaim Vital, and he was worried about this, and all these things that you have to be a huge Talmud Chacham to even start thinking about Kabbalah. That was Amul Gitzat, Amul Gedan. Used to be like, well, it's not that way anymore. Where we figured out the solution, where the world was fixed already, or all kinds of different language. And really, really like the simon, and this is like a real simon. Like the test of someone who is really that they have a huge amount of happiness, a huge amount of if you don't like the word happiness, we could use the word serenity or completeness or not feeling they have to go anywhere.
Contentment,
yeah. And that also plays out in their theories and theology. One of the defining things of both Kabbalah and Chassidus, and basically anyone that knows what he's talking about, is crazy, crazy levels of positivity. Literally crazy levels of positivity. Because if you ask the Arizal, he wrote this big Shana called Shana Gulgula, which talks about how, like, you know, the biggest shagets ever exist. Like, I mean, literally doesn't he talks about all kind of very, you know, famous names. And he says, well, you know, it says that, he literally says this, the Mishnah has this list of people that end up literally gone. And he says, well, that's what the Mishnah said, but if you read between the lines somewhere, you'll figure it out and you'll see. It's only like for a few years, and then
He didn't give up on them.
He didn't give up on any, literally on anyone. Like, he talks about Jesus and people, all kinds of people that he thinks of as very bad. And he says, yeah, and he literally gives them Gugulim and he explains who's going to fix them, all kinds of different ideas. Mm. And this is, and if you go to Nachman, and people don't think, this is the real sad thing. It becomes like a depressing thing, like, okay, we're all stuck all the time, so we're going to do chizek, and we're going to do mitzvah gedalias v'simcha, and yesh b'olam klal. And yesh b'olam klal was a real asuga. And yesh b'olam klal is really saying, I figured out the whole plan of the universe, and God always wins. He never loses. And whatever, wherever you are, you didn't create yourself, right? So there must be some kind of plan, whether we know it in detail or in general terms, and it's gonna win, it's gonna work, whether today or tomorrow or next week, doesn't really matter. That's like another sign of how truth is very much connected with positivity, at least the Jewish kind of truth. I don't know about Schopenhauer or people like that, but they were always like, try to bias on the side of making things sound too good, and not about finding the problem and everything.
I like that. Got all these points.
Okay.
I wanted to ask before, you'd said there are five rules of kavanos.
Five?
You said there were five rules of kavanos. Could we get those rules?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I didn't really make a list. I was thinking about
it. Oh,
I meant for the theory. Yeah.
Could we get those rules?
But I really don't have a list. Yeah, but we'll learn.
It's we'll
know
that. Kavanas,
of the Kavana or of the Fat?
I hit myself.
Oh, the rules are that chart, more or less. I mean, you need to know 2-3 more rules of how the mechanics connect. If you read, I think it is a place. Yeah, the rules are, I'll tell you. Okay, the rules of Kavanas are like this. But you're not going to get understand.
I'm not here to understand.
The basic rules of Kavanas are Kavanas, other Kavanas have different rules. Kavanas and Rashash are very basic rules. You know the map, so you already know the 5 times 5 times 5, so he gets to 125 or to 600 usually. Just so you know, we have to times everything. The Rashash, when he starts, he has 600 levels. Okay. Right? 5 times 5 times 5 is 600,
yeah.
Right? Now, the rules are basically what we do is we get Moichen. Now, those Moichen always come. That's one rule, always come, like I said, from the parts on top of you, so different levels. Now, in order to get Moichen, we have to do something before that, which is called Beridem. In other words, we start from the bottom and we bring up whatever problems you have that day. That's a Chassidish way. Through all the levels, so if you do Shachris or something like that, it's the most explicit. You go up from Adamasiyah, and then you bring them slowly, move to all the Adamas.
Mm-hmm.
And then what really happens is you need to bring them up all the way to the top source, which is in the Rashash's language, upside Da'ak, the basic first level that we ever think about, but really Da'in Saf, in other words. They're just the first level we talk about. And those Beridim, they on the way down, they turn into Moichen, so that's how we got Moichen. And then those Moichen, they do all kinds of stuff, but mostly they... You want to know, I don't know which number I'm at, but this is the basic story. Those Moichen, they have like a bunch of different levels, which Rashash calls Kol Tzema, Kolim Levish and Tzlema Moichen Oiris, which is backwards. In other words, Oiris means Oiris and Saf. Moichen are the Moichen, Tzlema are some kind of pseudo Moichen. And which am I up to? And then they have Levishim, which is also sub pseudo Tzlema. And then there's Kolim, which is the body or the Kli. And they all have their own, and the basic rule you have to know is that anytime you get Moichen, it comes in the Levish. That's where Levish is important, of the parts on top of you. In other words, mostly we talk about Zah. Zah starts off. I'm going to give him Moichen, so he gets Moichen from this whole story. But he gets done through the vessel of Ima, which in her has Abba, so there's always left and right over. Nai the Ima goes into Zah and gives him Moichen. And those Moichen makes a Yichud, and that's what we do by Sim Shulim, and basically. And then we go back down and bring the Shefa down. That's the whole story. I forgot something, I forgot what it was, but that's the rule of the whole thing.
That worked for you?
Yeah, good talk.
Yeah.
so we're good now.
Oh, the other rule that I forgot is that it's different level. So generally, you know, the general rule is that we always start with Zaka, that's where we actually focus on our work. Zah always starts with Vak, meaning Nefesh Rach, which is another way Chagat Nai work already work. That's called Mitikun Vashesh Nebrajes. God did that work for us, in other words, we exist. And then we have to add 3 levels, which are called Binachach Makesa. If you read Nechach Mamish, you know. And those 3 levels, they get divided 1,000 times, but in the most general sense, we do Bina in the weekdays, half of Bina, the Bina, Yashsut. Yashut in the weekdays, Abav Emelon on Shabbos, more or less that's the story. Kesa we do on Shavuos and on Sminat Seres maybe, and maybe a Shabbat and Mincha. That's how we get to that's the basic story.
Well, very good start.
And each level has all the details corresponding to that level. That's the whole thing. Kavanas Kol Hashana in 5 seconds.
Okay, well then.
I'm done that one.
Okay, now we're good.
Now you know a bunch of things that you don't know.
That was great.
I can't wait to revisit it later.